Well, good morning. I appreciate everybody being here this morning. It's been a few months since we probably got together, or Bill got together, you know, with the group. Been a couple months, but certainly excited. A lot of things going on here, I would say, with our team in the area, the off-season program, winding down some of the draft visits, Celtics basketball. So there's a lot going on. A few things before we get started into some of the questions. Quickly, just on the Hall of Fame nominees, it's a great group. You know, certainly congratulations to those three players. Claiborne probably predates a lot of us in this room, except for maybe Tom when he was writing about him in his St. Anselm dorm room. But you know, quite an accomplished career. 12 years, 161 straight starts. I mean, 37 career interceptions. He's a great football player. I mean. You know, Mike and Kevin can certainly speak a little bit more about them, having been around a little bit more. You know, those two players embody what the Patriot football program and what a football player is about. I mean, Kevin Falk, I mean, basically made himself into a great player that he was. I mean, you know, there's stories, you know, go back about how he basically taught himself how to pass block. He didn't know how to do it when he got here. Worked with Dante, you know, to try to get better in that area. And he embodied a lot of the things that we look for in football players. But dependable, was productive, and he's given back to football now. He's coaching down there in Louisiana. So, you know, it's credit to the career Kevin has had. And Mike, you know, Mike's career kind of speaks for itself. He was asked to do a number of different things, some of which he had never done before. He probably thought he had the best set of hands of anybody in the NFL. You know, quick story, we go out there for pregame warm-ups, and he and I used to throw to him before the game. The ball never hit the ground. It wasn't because of his hands. It was because the quarterback I was throwing was pretty bad. But, you know, he always talked about how his hands were better than Hines Ward. But, you know, that was Mike. And, you know, he played linebacker, played tight end, played free safety in practice. So, you know, tremendous nominees. We'll see how the process goes. But certainly a tip of the cap to that group, and congratulations to them. As we kind of wind down here with the process, there's certainly a lot of people that have put in a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of people that are involved in the process. You know, certainly at the top of the list is Monty Osfort and his staff. You know, nobody puts in more time. He has a tremendous amount of responsibility. He works diligently. He works very hard with myself and Coach Belichick and then his staff. You know, Smitty, Lip, DeJuan. I mean, those guys put a lot of time, a lot of effort. You know, it's kind of a culmination of a full-year process, kind of a 12-month process that we'll start up here, you know, really wind down here at the end of the week here, next week. So, you know, we're excited for the opportunity that we have in front of us. You know, we're kind of turning the page. We're trying to put together a 2016 team. We've kind of bits and pieces done that a little bit to this point. So we'll continue that process next week or so and continue to add. Sure, the composition of the team will change between now and ultimately when we first play in September, but it's kind of where we are here for, you know, for the time being. So, you know, we'll take some questions and go from there.
What are your some initial thoughts about this draft and some of the strengths and the weaknesses as compared to some of the years past?
Sure. The reality is the draft, and there's depth across all positions. I mean, everybody always looks for what positions of strength, you know, where's the draft deep. I mean, there's depth throughout the entire draft. I mean, you could really find players all the way from round 1 through 7. You know, other teams have done it. We've done it through the years. So it's not necessarily where they're drafted or where they come from or how they get there. It's just a matter of when you get them, what they do, you know, when they're there. So, I mean, really, every position, I would say, you're going to find good football players top to bottom. So it's just a matter of assigning your value to that player, what you think the player's role is going to be for us specifically, and then incorporating that into our program. And we're going through the process right now. I mean, we're winding down, but I would say by the end of it, we're only going to end up with X amount of players that we've considered drafting, regardless if it's, you know, second round, third round, all the way down to the seventh round. And then, of course, the undrafted component comes into play, which – there's a number of players that have come into our programs through the years, the Dane Fletchers, the David Andrews, Brandon Kings, all those types of players. So, I mean, it really, it's, you just go through the process and you just try to identify the fits in the players that, you know, that you think have a chance to fit into what you're doing, and then you pick them accordingly, however it goes.
How many players, Nick, are in the realm of you will draft them under a certain circumstance? For instance, Dominique Easley, tremendous physical athlete, had some injury issues, dropped down, you took a run at him, didn't work out, but there's going to be guys like, for instance, Miles Jack or players like that that have injury issues, just to throw a name out. Where do you guys figure, okay, this is okay to take this player and take this chance on him?
It's really relative to whatever else you may be looking at the time when you pick. So, you grade the player for who the player is, you evaluate his player, and then we have a system in place that sort of earmarks so that we know if whether it's an injury issue, whether it's a character issue, whether it's a, whatever the, you know, the alert may be. So you evaluate the player numerically, you assign the grade, and then you just figure out based on relative to whatever else is available at the time when you pick, and then you just have to make the decision, you know, that you feel makes the most sense for your team. So you're building, I mean, Bill's talked about this countless times, but it's a broad mosaic of things that you go into the player. It's never one particular thing that you're evaluating. You're evaluating an entire body of work over the course of 3-4 years, however long the player's been in school. So you assign the value to the player, the grade, and then you'll just look across relative to the other players at whatever position you may be picking. And in the end, you try to, you know, pick the players off how you think they're going to come off, and then maybe relative to if you feel that you can get that player a little bit later, a lot of it's supply and demand. So there's a number of factors that go into it. It's never really one particular thing.
Without a first-round pick, but having 2 seconds, I know that Bill in the past has talked about second round's a good place to roll the dice on a, maybe a first-round talent who's dropped. But because you don't have that first-round pick, would you be less prone to taking a chance on, you know, maybe a guy who's got an age issue, or maybe, you know, he's 25 or somebody like that?
Yeah, I don't really think it changes the overall philosophy. You still go through the same process. I mean, the reality is our process really hasn't changed all this year relative to what we've done in previous years. So, you know, we have the picks that we have, and we go through a similar process. We grade the players, and then we'll evaluate the players, and then we'll look up there and see, okay, at the time that we pick, whenever that may be, what one player looks like relative to another. So, you know, we've talked in the past about the vertical stacking, the horizontal stacking. So you're working individually by position, then you start to work across positions, and then just weigh, you know, those particular players. It could be whatever one position versus another, offensive player versus a defensive player, and then you may go back and then look at your team and say, okay, this maybe makes a little bit more sense, or we think if we pick this now, we can get this particular player later. So it all depends on the overall composition of the draft and where you think, how you think. You never really know how they're going to come off, but you have to make some kind of estimation of what you think makes the most sense.
Nick, the wide receiver position, would you agree that it's one of the more difficult positions to transition from college to the NFL, and why or why not?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there's only one position. I mean, look, the reality is these players are making a significant – I don't care where you play, you're making a significant jump from college football to NFL football. And I would say college football has kind of evolved a little bit, different, you know, both offensively and defensively, systematically. So some players have, I mean, honest to God, some offensive linemen have never been in a three-point stance. So the number of times that they're actually going to be in a three-point stance and have to run block is going to be infinitely more than they did in college. I mean, there's some programs, honest to God, they throw the ball 75 times a game, and they've never run blocked in their entire life. So they're making a transition, and you're going to be asking them, they're going to be asked to do things that they haven't been asked to do before. So there's systematic issues. There's some communication issues just in terms of, I would say, offensively, how teams operate. You know, there's a lot of information that comes from the sideline, and you're basically looking to one particular individual or one coach for a hand signal or a number, or you're looking up at the cards. I mean, a lot of teams use those in college. So you're basically wiping the slate clean, and you're basically starting at a different point, I would say, with a lot of the, regardless of the position. So you have to take that all into consideration and then project them into your system and the things that you're going to ask them to do.
Well, the way that you guys operate on offense, the demands on the receivers, I think, are well known, all the adjustments that need to be made on the fly. Do you think that maybe this offense is difficult for young receivers coming out of college to transition?
I'd say it's difficult for a lot of people. I mean, I'd say the offensive line, that they have as many demands and challenges as any skill player. I mean, change of protections, making adjustments to the line of scrimmage, late in the play clock. You have to get the communication from the center to the guard out to the tackle. You know, we're going to go from one protection to this protection. We're going to go run play to a pass play. So I would say there's a number of positions offensively that there's just a lot of communication and there's a lot of dialogue that are involved, and some can handle it quicker than others, and then you figure out, you know, what their learning mechanism may or may not be and how to get them to a point where they can go out there and operate and function at a competitive level. I think that's the most important thing.
Nick, you've been really busy, active in free agency. I think nine players added in free agency at least. Wondering, and across the board in different positions, wondering how that impacts your approach to drafting, and perhaps maybe a secondary question, if that takes some of the pressure off some of the upper-level draftees to, you know, start right away.
Right. Yeah. I mean, real look, there's every team goes through change during the offseason. I mean, you lose players, you sign players. We've signed our share of players. We're probably in a similar point to where we were last year. So you make additions to your team, but even when you make draft decisions, I would say you sort of make them independent, you know, of one another. So regardless of maybe you've signed a few more players at one position relative to another, that doesn't necessarily take you out of somebody, you know, if you feel, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. Maybe a short-term basis, you know, maybe you're looking at the players more of a short-term basis versus if you draft a player, hopefully he'll be in your program for 3 to 4 years or however long it may be. So I would say we've built a team to where we are to a certain point, but it doesn't necessarily change our overall philosophy or how we're going to try to add players to the team. You know, we've talked about this in years past, you know, with, say, Solder, you know, we drafted Solder, he came in, he basically played jumbo tight end and right tackle because we had Sebastian, we had Matt Light. So just because we had Matt and Sebastian didn't necessarily take us out of drafting, you know, Nate. So, you know, I think it, you know, you try to make the decision that you feel is best for your team based on the players that you're looking at on the board.
Dan, on a previous question, with so many players coming from a spread setting in college, what are some of the keys you look at specifically with players to determine if they can make the adjustment to a pro setting?
Yeah, I think you have to go through your process. You have to spend time with the player. You have to understand what they've been asked to do. So that's where, whether it's a pre-draft workout, a pre-draft visit, an interview or wherever it may be, you're trying to ascertain information from them and find, okay, what were they asked to do? And say, okay, well, here's what we're going to ask them to do. Do we feel that he's equipped enough to make that transition and handle that adjustment, that information? So you have to go through your process. You know, part of the, like I said, the on-campus visit or the interview, we'll go through an installation, whether it's a rookie minicamp installation, we'll install part of our offense and say, okay, you know, ask them, well, here's how we teach it. Here's the play. We'll go through it. Okay. Then you go out there and you walk through the play. You actually see how much they can retain. So there's a number of things that you can do to sort of anticipate how they would handle making that transition. But the reality is, until you actually have them, you really don't know, because maybe you find that their curve is a little bit quicker than, doesn't take them as long as originally you had thought. So you just have to kind of go through your process of gathering information and then make an assessment about how you feel that player is going to project into what you're going to ask them to do.
How much, if at all, does the pre-draft process change for you guys when you guys make changes among the positional coaches? And I know that obviously it's a 12-month-a-year thing, but if you guys are changing, you know, assistants at this time of year, is there ever a debate? Is there ever a back and forth? How does it all work out?
As far as which aspect, Chris?
If you guys change a positional coach, and a positional coach will come in with an idea, look, I prefer a player to be doing this as opposed to a scout, maybe has a different opinion on something.
There's a lot of, I mean, back and forth. I mean, we talk, I would say, regularly, you know, with Bill, myself, and, you know, there's a lot of communication back and forth, and coaches are involved in the process. So you're trying to take all the information, put it all together, and then make an assessment of how you feel that player is going to adjust or project what you're going to ask them to do. So, like I said, sometimes it takes players a little bit longer relative to others. So there's a lot of information that goes back and forth. There's a lot of dialogue. I mean, we meet on a regular basis because in the end, we're trying to get it right the best we can. The reality is the way the draft is designed, it doesn't always work out. I mean, honestly, at times it's a 50-50 coin flip. I mean, that's just the reality of it. So even if you think it's going to go a certain way, it may not go. Then you try to figure out, okay, well, what can we do better? How can we adjust it? So we're always trying to look at different ways of doing things, look at our processes, whether that's playing, whether that's coaching, whether that's scouting, whether that's in a weight room, on a multitude of levels, and just try to figure out if there's something that we can improve, how can we improve it, and then how do we implement that improvement moving forward?
You guys said the philosophy doesn't change earlier, though. Now you just said you changed things. So the base stays the same?
What I was alluding to is our philosophy of scouting players that hasn't changed for as long as Bill's here. We still go through the same process. So what part are you alluding to?
So if you, like, strike on a Tavon Wilson, then the philosophy that led you to draft him, that stays the same going forward no matter what we look at guys?
We go through the same process every year. We evaluate the player. We meet with the player. We spend time with them, and then we project them into the role. Sometimes it works the way you think it's going to. Other times it doesn't work. So we're looking at everything that we do in our program on a multitude of levels. But I would say the process of the scouting process from the beginning of, call it May of this time or April this time last year till the end, just structurally how we do it. Now, we may change a part of it, but just from the beginning to the end of the process you have to go through, you have to evaluate the player on your film, you go through the all-star process, you go through the combine, you go through the pre-draft process, you go through the workout, you go through the visit. Structurally, that stays the same. Now, what you do within the context of that, if there's a better way to do it, then we'll look at it.
Nick, you guys have a pick, or a wait that lasts about 100 picks between the end of the third round and I think your first pick in the sixth round. What are some of the challenges, I guess, of having that kind of wait scheduled, at least right now, and is it important to the team to maybe get into a couple of those middle rounds of fourth and fifth so that you don't have that long wait?
We'll see. I mean, the most important thing is kind of knowing the draft from top to bottom. So if you do, I mean, a couple of years ago we had five picks. I think we were going to the draft with five picks, and we ended up with more. So it can move both ways. So I think the most important thing is knowing the players, knowing who you're talking about, and then if you are going to make a decision to move up from where you are, who are you moving up for and what's the rationale? So you try to weigh out a number of different things as you're going through it. So however it works itself out, like, we're prepared to pick either way, whether it's from 96 to 196, whether if we move. So we're prepared. We're flexible. I think you have to keep an open mind with a lot of this. I mean, nothing's really set in stone, if you will. So you have to be flexible. It's pretty fluid, and you just have to be prepared for whenever your opportunity comes.
Nick, how many times have you and Bill talked privately about how asinine it is that the Patriots don't have a first-round pick this year?
Excuse me? Repeat the question.
How many times have you and Bill talked privately about how ridiculous it is that the Patriots don't have a first-round pick this year?
Yeah, our philosophy is we control the things that we can control. So our job is to prepare for the draft, and whatever our picks are, then be prepared to pick. So a lot of that's out of our hands, so there's nothing we could do about that. So there's no sense in spending extra time on it because there's nothing we can do about it. So we're just going to try to prepare for the draft and take advantage of our opportunities when we pick.
What's the significance of not having a first-round pick, both in terms of short-term and long-term on the organization?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're prepared to pick whenever we pick, and there's been many years where we haven't had a first-round pick, and, you know, we've adjusted accordingly. I mean, a couple of years ago, we drafted Chung at the top of the second round. I think we didn't have a first-round pick. So, look, whenever we pick, we're prepared to pick, and we'll take advantage of the opportunities the best we can and just try to add good players to our team. That's ultimately what we're trying to do.
You guys have had a lot of success with your first-round picks, though. Would you acknowledge that? I mean, considering the hit rate, well, like you said, it's a coin flip, but it's come up heads more often with you guys in the first
round. Yeah, look, we can't control where we pick. I mean, it's out of our hands. So what we control is what we do with the pick when we have it, and that's what we're prepared to do, and that's how we're going to approach it, next couple weeks. So, all right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.